Hello and welcome to Hot Air, the DC Breezes podcast. My name is Greg Esser. In this third episode of 2019, I bring on the DC Breeze captain, David Bloodgood. A great interview with him on tap, and I encourage you to listen to the full podcast here today. Bloodgood was a player in 2017, a rookie in 2017 for the Breeze, had a broken collarbone for the duration of 18, and he is back with a vengeance this year in that captain position. Since last we spoke, two DC Breeze games have occurred. The first one on the road in New York, it was a close one. The Breeze led at halftime, and they were tied at the end of the third quarter. But ultimately, a strong fourth quarter went the way of the New York Empire. But I think we saw a DC Breeze team that can really keep up with them. A guy that was an MVP candidate last year, Ben Yacht, was really controlled by the Breeze. I thought that was a badge of respect and a badge of success in that game. And keeping it close right down to the wire, also a badge of success. I think when the Empire come to the district, that intangible home field advantage that comes in every professional sport, that home-cooked meal, maybe a more complete roster in the case of the AUDL, I'm going to look at the Breeze to try to steal one off the Empire this year. And I think that that first home game was proof that they can really hang with their neighbors to the north. Second game of the year was against the Philadelphia Phoenix. It was the home opener for the Breeze. It was played at our new field at Catholic University here in the district. And that one went the way of the Breeze. The Breeze sit at 1-1. They won by 2 points. It wasn't another nail-biter. Definitely worth coming out to these games, as it's an exciting environment. More intimate field than last year, the one we're using at Catholic this year. And, a beautiful day. The next one is a night game, one of the few Saturday night games we've got in 2019. It is also college night, so some deep discounts if you've got your college ID in tow with you at that game. So come on out. It is May 4th, 6 p.m., Catholic University. Hope to see you out there. Let's jump into our main content here today. Thanks goes out to DC Breeze sponsors, Papa John's Pizza, Spectrum Management, Oak Creek Apparel, Cobalt CRM Solutions, Murphy's Grill, the host of the DC Breeze After Party each week. We'll be having our after party there, as always, on that next game I had already mentioned, May 4th. I'll see you out there. Also, thanks to our nonprofit partner, Forest Planet, planting a tree for each home game ticket sold. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Play us in, Broke Royals. David Bloodgood joining me in the studio. David, the Kid Bloodgood, a throwback to your college nickname, double D on the end of there. Not really sure why. Regardless, we'll leave that be where it was in college. You are now in Washington, D.C., a third-year player for the Breeze. But are you really a third-year player? You broke out in 2017. You had those 15 blocks. You disappeared last year. We're welcoming you back in the first two games of 2019. Where'd you go?
Yeah, so in 2017, after the Breeze season and the club season at regionals, I actually broke my collarbone getting a D.
Get an important note, getting
yeah.
A D.
No, I got the D, don't worry about that.
Bone shards were flying off and blocking the frisbee.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But it sidelined me for 4 months. I came back to play in LA Throwback, and I broke it again there.
Oh my gosh.
The same collarbone. Pretty unfortunate, but nothing.
Is it all one collarbone? Same side of collarbone?
It's the same collarbone, same exact spot. It actually didn't heal all the way, but I thought it had.
My question is, do you have two collarbones?
Well, I have one fully functional collarbone and one that's kind of like a bionic collarbone now.
So every human has two collarbones.
Oh, for sure.
I didn't know if it was connected somewhere.
Nope.
Okay.
Two different ones.
Got it.
So
you got to fill me with anatomy too.
Yeah, I'm here to help.
Thanks.
So in 2018, I came back. I was traveling some for the first part of the season, but in the second half, I came back and I helped out on the sideline doing some coaching. I distinctly remember, especially during a Toronto game, helping out on the sideline.
Is that frustrating to go from the playing role to the sideline, and how did you take to that transition?
Yeah, so it's really hard. When you see something bad happen on the field and you think you can help, the first thing you want to do is jump on the field and help right away. You know, put me in there, let me play, right, coach? But really, you know, you got to be smart about with your body and know that you can help from the sidelines still. I've played a lot of the guys in Toronto a couple times. I know their strengths, I know their weaknesses, so trying to pass on that knowledge to my other teammates really helped them succeed in that game.
So you fell into that role, you're back this year, and this year you're captaining the Breeze, yet another transition. Tell me what that looks like in the leadership role.
Yeah, so it's a little different. You're not just responsible for your game. You're also
responsible for coming on Hot Air.
Right, yeah. I have to be here now. Not that I don't want to. It's uh-huh, just, you know, uh-huh. I have to. And
I'll undo your handcuffs when you've completed the podcast to my satisfaction.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Luckily, I can pick a lock, though. You're not just responsible for yourself, but you're also responsible for... everybody else too, you know. So as I'm looking at my game, I also have to realize what's working well for our entire team, what's not working for our team. And so I did that in the past in college. We didn't have a coach, so all of that kind of fell on me and my two assistant captains. So I've done it before, but it's a new experience doing it at the pro level.
So tell me about then the process of maybe getting buy-in from a roster and getting a buy-in from a roster like the high caliber one that you've got with On the Breeze. You've done college, as you mentioned, but you know, I probed Coach Stanley a couple weeks ago about, you know, his goals for the season, and he cleverly deflects. Can you give me any insight into how you get the buy-in of this group of 36 guys ahead of a season? Do you have goals?
So my personal goal is to go out and just win every game.
Yeah.
You know, we prepare each week. Each week is different. We prepare for the opponent we're playing. So we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves and think, you know, well, what are we going to do against New York in 3 weeks from now or whatever? We're worried about our next game coming up and how we can prepare for that.
May 4th, Ottawa.
Right, exactly. And so we know they have, you know, some really good players on that team, and we're going to try and limit what they like to do best. And it's just, you know, getting a buy-in, having that trust of your entire team and knowing that they have your back and you have theirs, and everyone's working hard to that goal, to win that game.
So that makes sense. You're thinking about the next game. I'll go in one more time. Binding this group of 36 people together, though, is there an overarching goal to get buy-in, to get people to show up to practice on an off week? You know, you're not thinking of the next game maybe as much.
Yeah, I mean, that's even better for us because lets us all cement our systems and what we want to do. We have a lot of young players on this team, and it's just a perfect opportunity for everyone to step in and show what they can do and show that they're going to be the next great player on the field. You know, I had a great rookie season. Who's going to have the great rookie season this season? And just really all work together to be ready for the playoffs when they roll around.
You want a chance to name drop? I'll give you, I like that lead in. Do you have any favorites after two games? Sixth of the season at this point? Any favorites on who might be some of those breakout rookies we see this year?
Yeah, so one guy's on our O-line. Garrett has been having a really great...
Garrett Braun?
Yeah, Garrett Braun's been having a really great season. He's not a super flashy player, but he just kind of does everything right. You know, he's always in the right spot cutting. He's got really good throws. If you dare him to throw it deep, he'll prove that he can do it. So I think he's going to be a really good cog in that O-line throughout the rest of this season. And Kyle Vezina's really come on in the D-line. He had a really great block last week. Didn't count because of a delay of game, which is a shame. But
yeah.
He's showing that he's ready to fly around the field. And I know he had a great D on Babbitt on a hammer in week one. You know, showing he can keep up with some of the greats and not going to back down from the challenge.
Yeah, made up a couple inches on Babbitt to kind of sky for that hammer, as I recall.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so I mentioned, glad to have those name drops, have them on record, see if they win Rookie of the Year, and then we can credit you back to Hot Air. It's recorded. But I mentioned Coach Stanley there, and so that's an interesting point because it's a guy that you've worked with for years now. You worked with him, of course, over your career on the Breeze, 17, 18, and now 19, but you were introduced to Daryl as a head coach on the club team out of Philadelphia, citywide. In 2016, he was your head coach. You want to talk about your relationship with Coach Stanley?
Yeah, so he was still pretty new to coaching. I mean, he coached a little bit as an assistant in the Phoenix for the
EDL
for a couple years. But having that head coaching role was something new for him. I know he coached at Penn. So I played against him a couple times in college.
That's interesting, too.
But having him on that Philadelphia citywide special team was great. He was trying out new things. He was trying out like this isolation and cutting, and really experimenting really hard with that. And our relationship has definitely grown. We both moved down to DC at about the same time. I started playing Breeze with him as he got that job.
That's right. In fact, he was actually I was actually talking with him on his way down to DC, because he's a guy I've had a relationship with for a very long time. And one of our first conversations with him moving down to DC and, you know, potentially taking over the Breeze and working with Dutchie to select some of the players, you got an early name drop in that process. I remember the first time you mentioned David Bloodgood.
Yeah, I mean, he coached me, and then that next year I had a really great college season. And so he knew what I was capable of, and we were ready to move on and move on to bigger and bigger things. He was coaching the Breeze and Truck Stop. I just made the Breeze and eventually went on to make Truck Stop. And, you know, we really have kind of built a relationship, and we're always happy to chat Ultimate and talk and bounce ideas off each other and see what really works best.
Is there any non-Ultimate thing that you guys can decompress, and there's a commonality between you and Daryl that when it's not 100% Ultimate? How do you bro out with Daryl Stanley?
I don't know. We just hang out, joke around, crack jokes. You know, the regular banter.
Okay.
Nothing too crazy. I know we both think about Ultimate all the time, and
yeah,
we're both crazy watching films. So I feel like every time we hang out, we end up like just falling right back into Ultimate talk. Right.
Got it.
It's hard to get away from that.
Got it. So I mentioned that citywide team you did as well, that citywide special team in 2016. That was a pretty loaded roster in terms of maybe younger guys on the early end of what they would do greatness-wise in Ultimate. But a lot of those guys have now gone on. You had Nate Vendetta on the team, now a coach of the Philadelphia Phoenix. You had Ryan Weaver on the team. He played center handler and probably, you know, got the most points out of any Philadelphia Phoenix you played against last weekend. Did you know at the time you were amongst, you know, such up-and-comers in the sport?
No, I didn't really. We were all just having a great time, you know, goofing off, playing Frisbee, enjoying ourselves. And, you know, Ryan Weaver, definitely one of the better players on that team. Really strong thrower. But, you know, back then I think he was maybe a little slower, wasn't ready to get open in the dump space as well. And he's shown that he can do that really well now. Ethan Fortin, very similar player to that. You
also
know, really great
Phoenix,
throws.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. I didn't know Nate was going to, you know, transition to coaching, but I know he's had some injuries and he's got a great mind, and it's what you can do to help. And really, if you enjoy doing that, it's really fun to take your ideas and give them to other people and watch them or just run with them.
How about a Mark Phillipson? Does that name ring a bell, a guy that also was on that team?
Yeah, I know he's out in San Jose now.
That's
right?
Yeah.
Doing some good things. We actually had a Daryl shouted him out in the citywide group me.
Oh yeah.
From that year, you know, a couple weeks or last week or 2 weeks ago, something like that, after one of his big games. So it's great to see that, you know, that team is really expanding and passing on that Ultimate to the rest of the country, right?
Yeah. Yeah, how about that? So we talked a lot about kind of, yeah, so the past in Philadelphia, the present in DC. So I've had Jonathan Neely on this podcast twice, a guy that was actually similarly, formerly in your exact role right now, a captain of the Breeze. And a thing that he liked to talk about with me a lot, and I was always an avid student, was about kind of the regional styles of Ultimate. And so I'm wondering if you see any differences having kind of come from cutting your teeth in Lehigh University and Eastern Pennsylvania, and then coming down to D.C. stylistically with those two Ultimate scenes.
Yeah, so in the Philadelphia scene, they definitely came, they had a lot of smaller handler types that were definitely some of their better players. So they were willing to just work the disc with those guys. They had an entire system where after they got a centering pass, they would immediately try and bounce the disc back to a handler just to get it moving again in that quick movement.
You're talking about the David Brandoffs, a guy that had 50 assists in the AUDL in 2013. You're talking about the David Bears, who's still active this past weekend at the ripe old age of 31, played this weekend.
Those crafty handlers that just find a way to make plays and have the throws to back up their play. So I think for that style, you know, even just 3 hours north of here on 95, you can see that.
Well, what time of day?
Well, we're talking early in the morning on a Saturday.
Okay, yeah. Checks out.
That's going to be 12 hours if it's on Friday afternoon.
That's right.
But yeah, so they get the ball in those guys' hands, and it works really well for them. And I think down here, we have a lot of big cutters who are willing to make plays. I mean, obviously, Rowan's one of them.
Yeah.
You got David Cranston is another guy.
Yeah.
He's not playing Breeze this year or anything, but it's those kind of players.
Even Max Castle's used in that role.
Right. And it's those kind of players who are really shape the way the DC plays ultimate, you know? Mm-hmm. And they have the throwers to back it up. I mean, Markham Schaffner, and not playing this year, but one of those guys with really big throws. Max Castle willing to just stretch the field really, really deep. And that kind of long ball game is what really makes DC ultimate really strong.
So you think, do you think that these styles then developed because of local coaching preferences, or you think these styles developed around who the elite players in town were?
I think they developed based off of the coaches to start. I know a lot of West Coast teams tend to run a lot of horizontal stack. Some East Coast teams, like for example Boston, has been running a vertical stack for years and years and years.
That's right.
And so especially areas with really good youth programs, like for example Seattle or San Francisco or North Carolina,
or
DC. I think
if AJ Merriman's ever any proof,
exactly. I mean, if you learn that style early on, it's just going to transition to as you get older. That style is going to hang around,
yeah.
And if you're used to playing that way, and everyone you play with is used to playing that way, that chemistry is going to flow really, really well.
Nice. So we've talked a lot about kind of some of the strategy and about your path, but let's talk a little bit about the games we've seen so far. Let's start back at the beginning. There's been two games that have occurred since last I was able to record an episode, so you're now the authority on both them. we'll talk first. We'll go low and then we'll go high. A loss in New York City, but it was a close one. You were winning at halftime. You want to fill me in on kind of your narrative of the game first, and then we'll talk about maybe some takeaways?
Yeah, so I thought from the defensive side, right, we knew they had a lot of stars coming in for that offensive line. You had Ben Yacht.
Huge offseason in New York.
Right.
Grant Linsley.
Yeah, Grant Linsley, Jack Williams.
Yeah.
And they still have, you know, solid throwers and Harper Garvey there, just willing to, you know, distribute to those guys. He'll happily just throw it once and let them all work downfield. So we just tried to do the best we could to, you know, take them out of their comfort zone. You know, we tried to, you know, push Harper downfield, and he knows we're going to do that, and he's still smart enough to come back and get the frisbee. You know, we tried to push Ben Yacht under, but he's still caught a couple goals deep.
Yeah.
So
although I would say that Ben Yacht largely was neutered in that game.
Yeah, and so you know, we try and clog the lane when you know Grant Lindsay's out there cutting, because he's a really hard cover one-on-one. And so it's just trying to junk up their offense in a way that they don't get to do exactly what they want to do. We're making their second-best thrower throw it to their third-best cutter, as opposed to Harper ripping hucks to Ben Yacht, you know?
Yeah.
And from the offensive side, we were just, you know, happy to take what they gave us. I know they had a pretty solid defensive game. Josh Allura had a really good game guarding our initiators, and he covered Nate Pryor decently well towards the end, which is not an easy task.
Yeah.
But we were still able to, you know, punch in and convert pretty easily for a lot of that game, and I think that just is attributed to our spacing on the field and making it really hard for their defenders to get close to our cutters.
So if that was your game one New York strategy, and I think that's a common one you hear across Ultimate, is, you know, try to identify what their primary looks are, push them to the tertiary one. You know, are there any big takeaways? I mean, you match up twice more with New York this year, and you were within spitting distance of the Empire at the end of this thing. How do you make that final leap, and how do you take one off these guys next time you run into them?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were right there. We were super close. It was tied going into the fourth quarter.
That's right.
And, I mean, they maybe upped their defensive pressure a little bit, but I think it was, you know, us giving them the game and not really them taking it so much at the end. We had a drop, a throwaway, one miscommunication in the dump space.
Yeah, and kind of freak stuff in the last quarter.
Yeah, and it's, you know, that I'm sure one or two of those happened earlier in the game, but, you know, they didn't happen down the stretch.
Not magnified.
Right. And so I think once we practice and just keep that practice coming, those miscues are not going to happen so much, right?
Yeah.
We're going to know what we face next time, and we're going to be ready for that defensive pressure and ready to, you know, cut and get open and be ready to make those throws when the time comes.
So, good takeaways from New York. Let's talk about then the win that brought you to 1-1 this past weekend, the home opener against the Philadelphia Phoenix. From my seat in the booth, it was a harder game to understand strategically because the wind was so fierce. A lot of it was simply who was able to run harder onto a disc that was still floating. A lot of it was a gritty win, pushing at that final 10% to run to the end zone and track down a disc, whatever it was. Any big takeaways from this game?
I think you really got to see what both teams were missing, really. We were missing one of our defensive handlers in David Shields not being there.
It's true.
Guy who can really just cut through the wind no problem. And
yeah.
Obviously that was a really big miss. You could see our defensive offense really slow down a little bit. I know I did a lot of the handling purely, and that really slowed us down. But the same thing happened for Philadelphia. They were missing Scotty Joux and Shank on the other side. So two of their defensive handlers just weren't there. And you could also see their defensive offense also struggled a little bit.
I mean, not to mention the 25, 30-mile-an-hour gusts.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, I think both teams actually did a pretty solid job of still running their offense pretty well and trying to space the field. But, you know, any small mistake was obviously amplified.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the defense had a great day and was going out there and making blocks, and those guys were hungry, you know, excited to pad the stats in a game like that.
Tell me this. One of my early narratives of watching the Breeze has been a lot how Darryl is managing lines. And he, in the New York game, it didn't look like he was adhering to a strict offense or defense line, including yourself. I think you had 12 points on defense. Makes sense. That's the bulk of yours. But I believe it was 8 points on offense. So you crossed over a lot. In the Philadelphia game, he went back to a more stereotypical, more tried and true in the Ultimate Frisbee game, O and D line. What do you make out of that?
Yeah, so game one was the game of the week in week two. So we had a little extra time in between a couple points here or there.
Oh, taking advantage of that Sunday night football commercial breaks.
Right, exactly. So Darryl was happy to throw out a couple more handlers onto that O-line, you know, make sure we're keeping the Frisbee and not really making dumb mistakes, and I think it paid off pretty well. I think the O-line was very efficient that game. It actually really turned out to benefit us come week two, because I know some of the Philadelphia guys had mentioned that we totally messed up their matchups because they were expecting, you know, me to be on that O-line, and so they had one of their handler defenders ready to cover me, and now he's got to, you know, cover someone maybe downfield, you know, maybe try and cover Garrett Braun. Maybe that's not what he was expecting.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, try and cover someone a little taller that they weren't ready for.
Interesting. Huh. So that's also kind of playing off the nature of, like, scouted videotaped Ultimate, which is only, you know, just reaching full fruition.
Right, exactly. And it's also just, you know, playing to our opponents. I think our O-line, we felt, could really work it with this, no problem, against Philadelphia's D-lines. So we didn't need any of those crossovers. We're happy to let our regular O-line go out there and make the plays. Then we really wanted our D-line to have those extra handlers on there to try and make those plays in this win, right? And
yeah.
I'm not helpful on a defensive offense if I'm only playing O points.
Well, given that line about video scouting, I've got some good news for you, maybe. We had some technical problems in the booth last week, and I'm not proud of this, but we're gonna iron out the kinks going forward. The video that got put up of the game, little jerky at times, and it'll be harder to scout it.
Yeah, you know, that's our home field guys playing advantage to us.
Yeah,
and
you're welcome.
Helping us out best they can. So the Ottawa can't really get that scouting report on us.
Okay, this time the podcast, I'm going to do one of my reoccurring segments. It's called Over Underrated. I give you a thing, Ultimate related, not Ultimate related. I need you to respond as to whether it is overrated, underrated, and why.
Okay.
Defend yourself.
All right, I'll do the best I can.
Another guy that was on that 2016 Citywide team, a former teammate of yours, a teammate once again, now he goes to Maryland. Once upon a time he went to Penn State, Alex Liu. Over underrated.
I think he's underrated. He just finished his fifth year at Maryland last year, so he's not eligible anymore. And he's a small guy, and so people often think of him as a handler type. But I think we have found that he's very quick and very good in that initiating space and ready to just kind of take over, beat the other team with throw and goes, use his quickness. And the minute you fall under on him, he'll happily just stretch you deep, and he's got the quickness to take off.
He's one of the guys that facilitates your breaking vert stack, first initiator type of cut.
Yeah, he's happy to just, you know, take that, continue off of it, and if he needs to, he'll throw it deep too.
All right.
Underrated.
How about, increasingly, I feel like, I also grew up in the Lehigh Valley. I grew up in the Lehigh Valley area. It's where you attended college, Lehigh right. University, we mentioned it already.
Exactly.
So often, the media loves to highlight. Recently, Bernie Sanders had a presidential or a media appearance in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, where they cite the Bethlehem sob story. Big Steel moved out. Over underrated, the Bethlehem clear out. The Bethlehem, you know, as this husk of a manufacturing center.
I mean, I wasn't there right after Bethlehem Steel folded.
But it's still played up that Bethlehem is still reeling from this. Over underrated, you know, this sob story.
Whether it's still today, I would have to go a little overrated. Not by much. It's just now, I think, recently, in the last few years, starting to turn around. And still some parts of South Bethlehem are, you know, really not that great. And there's still a lot of people hurting from that, you know, crash of Bethlehem Steel, all those jobs leaving. 10, 15 years ago, I hear it was much worse, and then I'm sure this sob story would actually be underrated. But I think it's starting to turn around slowly but surely, as I actually think the casino moving in has definitely helped and brought some jobs. And
yeah, there's a venue there now, right?
Right, yeah. So definitely improving the area.
Okay. A weird one for DC-based listeners, but we share that.
Yeah, there's a couple Lehigh guys who are, you know, might dispute me on this, but I guess we'll have to ask them later.
Tell me this. Over underrated escape rooms.
I gotta go underrated.
You're an escape room fan?
Yeah, I love them. Oh my god, they're so fun. So I've done maybe four of them in my life.
What's your escape percentage?
I'm 4 for 4.
4 for 4.
I know what I'm doing here, Greg.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was in the presence of an escape room legend.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a room I need to get out of, I can get out.
I mentioned those handcuffs earlier, but no joke.
You're
out of them right now.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing. I wasn't lying earlier. Yeah, I've actually been a couple times. Some of my college Frisbee friends are actually in town, so we went to one around here, which is a blast. I think there's one over in Georgetown.
Wait, you blew your way out of the room? Like, explosion, a blast?
No, but I actually did an escape room where part of it was you had to escape out of a bank.
Oh.
You were stuck in a bank and you had to escape out. Well, actually, you were bank robbers, but, you know, we don't like to talk about that.
Gloss it over.
Yeah, we'll be quiet on that one. And you had to, you know, blast your way out of the vent for one of the tricks, and that was really fun. It was actually we did all the aunts and uncles in my family against all the cousins.
Oh.
So, it was who could get out of their escape room first, and, you know, the cousins won, of course, but...
This whole business of having you on the podcast was really just a long con, because 3 episodes in a row in 2017, your ears were burning because we were talking, all we could talk about in the cool down from hot air was David Blood's good love of mafia. So maybe it's not even part of Over Under. You survived Over Under. Tell me more about the storied oral tradition that's been handed down of playing mafia with David Bloodgood on a Breeze bus road trip.
It's...
You're quite a gamer.
It's such a fun game because it's all about lying and deception.
Which is your thing?
In a game setting, it's definitely my thing. I try to be pretty real in person, but... Okay.
Don't be cheating on this podcast with some Altiworld podcast.
It's all just part of the mafia game. That's the trick, you know? But no, it's really fun game, and it's great to just like put your friends on the spot and just call them out and see how they respond, because a lot of people are not really good liars, and it's good to see, you know, who can really fight their way out of it. I actually got to give a shout out to Dave Bear on the Philadelphia Phoenix. Very, very good mafia player.
Oh, really?
Himself, actually.
Yeah.
Has pretty much managed to lie his way through and convince everyone that he was a good guy when really, you know, he was not. But he definitely knows what he's doing. And the Davids, you know, have a pretty good way of sharing their mafia knowledge and passing it on. So, you know, I definitely think the Davids, you know, me and Shields for sure could take anyone.
Rapid fire round of other fun road trip games. Thumbs up or thumbs down on Roadkill Bingo?
have never played Roadkill Bingo, so I'm not even sure what it is.
I mean, you just have to spot the, like, so you have, like, a grid.
And you just, like, if you see that kind of roadkill,
then you get it. Yeah.
I'm going to go thumbs down. It's just a little weird. And I think there could be some arguments of whether that was a possum or a raccoon, you know? I can see that getting heated very, very quickly.
Well, if it gets nice and heated, you can just scoop it up and, you know, have a nice little dinner.
Yeah, well, I mean... you could.
Thumbs up or thumbs down, holding your breath through the tunnel?
I'm going to go thumbs down because we always had a tradition at Lehigh where you had to just... we had a joke ongoing. You know, someone asked Lehigh's team one time if they were like a fraternity, and someone joked around and was like, yeah, we're Alpha Sigma Sigma, you know? just making fun of that. And so... we would always jokingly yell Sigma and see if we could say that throughout the entire tunnel. So, you know.
Okay.
Different,
okay.
Just different. Yeah. Similar, but different.
All right. Well, so you have survived every question that I could possibly throw at you. As I always do, you've got a hot mic in front of you. You have the Breeze Nation. You have the hot air fans on the other end of this microphone. Is there anything Ultimate related, personal finance related, anything you could think of that you want to shout out right now?
Yeah, I just love everyone to keep coming out to our games, you know, come out, and we got some pretty solid opponents coming up. And
at Catholic University, May 4th is our next one, 6 p.m. against the Ottawa Outlaws.
Right, exactly. So that's going to be a big one, and then we got New York after that. I think they come to us. Or
you go to New York.
On the 11th. And then...
On the 11th, and then there's another home game. Stay tuned for a future episode of Hot Air when I get it right, but my guess is the 28th of May against... the hard-to-pronounce Montreal Royale.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I think there's some really good opponents we get to play. I know Montreal has a really big fan base, so it'd be great if we could, you know, outcompete them for fans here in D.C.
Yeah.
I know last week it was a little breezy, but, you know, that's what we want.
Sure.
And it was perfect weather, and I think D.C. is just a great spot for Ultimate. So.
Yeah, I would say my take on it was a much better game to spectate, because it was beautiful, full sunshine, then maybe to play in because the wind made your job hard.
Yeah, but it's fun throwing through the wind. I mean, I thought that was a great thrower's wind, and happily will show that I can break the mark in any wind condition and, you know, let some of those big throwers go out there and make the throws with the wind.
Well, right? you showed it off because the breeze prevailed 20-18. Any other thoughts from you before we close this thing down?
That's all I got, Greg.
All right.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on, and thanks everyone for listening. Until next time, adios.